on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, a special Memorial Day edition. Perhaps you're hearing this program for the first time today. Typically, we spend the hour listening to a World War II veteran relate his experiences in combat. It sure adds to our perspective when we hear what it was really like and how great a sacrifice our greatest generation made for the rest of us. There were more than 405,000 Americans who died while serving in World War II. So often, their stories are forgotten. Our guest today, Roger Murray of Visalia, California, was just an infant when his father, Roger Jameson, was reported killed in action after his B-25 was shot down. The adventure of unraveling his father's story layer by layer is chronicled in Roger's book, Letters Home from a Fallen Hero. You can find a link at hometownheroesradio.com. And when we left off, some pieces of his dad's story had gradually come into focus. And then, as a manager for Southern California Edison, Roger was sent out to follow up on a customer's concern. Little did you know, Roger, that what must have seemed like a pretty mundane and random appointment would lead to even more clues along this journey of discovery.
Well, we struck up a friendship. Several months later, this gentleman called me. He knew that I collect Edison memorabilia and just all kinds of historical items. So he drives to my office and opens up the trunk of his car, and he had a stack of newspapers that filled the back of his car. And he said, "I want you to have these. These are my mother's. It's her collection, and I want you to have them." So I took the newspapers home. I had a workshop. I spread them out on the floor. Colonel Miller calls. I hadn't seen him in quite a few years. And he says, "Roger, we're in the area. We'd like to come by and say hi." So they came to the house. I said, "Jim, you need to come see what I have here. I want you to show you these magazines and newspapers." We go in the garage, and as he picks up a newspaper, four clippings fell out of the newspaper, and they were maps. And he says, "Roger, do you understand the significance of these?" I said, "No, not really." He said, "This is where your father was killed." Well, it's an area called Sfax in Tunisia. I had no clue where my dad went down. I knew he went down in the Mediterranean. That was all I knew. And now I actually have the maps that show where he went down.
In a stack of newspapers.
Stack of newspapers. So I called the customer and I said, "Sir, were you in World War II?" He said, "No." I said, "Did you have a brother or a relative in World War II?" "No." I said, "Why would your mother cut out of all these newspapers, why would those be the only maps that she cut out?" He says, "I don't have a clue."
Hmm.
So everything's now starting to come together.
I don't want to get all melodramatic,
yeah,
but were you starting to feel that it was almost your destiny to discover something, that there was a lot more out there, and that if you sought it, you would find it?
Not at the time.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, my grandson wanted to do a report on my dad. So he calls me and said, "Grandpa, I found your father, and he's buried in Tunisia." Well, I didn't know that. I started researching that. That's when I started, at the same time, to write the book about my dad, transcribing the letters.
Mm-hmm.
And what's kind of interesting in the letters that I found, the ones that my mother wrote, we mentioned that my mom married my dad on March 16th when he got his wings. She was one of four war brides that would follow the guys up and down the coast before they went overseas. And so she writes, "Mom Susie, we girls went up to Stockton to see the boys. The boys couldn't leave the post. And so we girls go into the officers' club and have dinner." And she says, "One by one, we sneak out in the parking lot and do a little loving in our designated cars." This is my 20-year-old mother.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought that was really awesome. That really hit home to me, and it showed the love that they had and the openness that she had with my grandmother. I contacted Colonel Miller, and he informed me that there was the last ever bomb group reunion in Seattle, and that he was going from Arizona, and he said, "Roger, you need to go." I wanted to go to be with him and his family. Again, I didn't know that much about my dad or the campaign, or I had his letters. So I took my book that I had written at the time, which is just essentially the letters. I walked into the hospitality room. They had tables laid out throughout the whole room of memorabilia that people brought to share with others. As I walk over to a table, I see an old book, and it's called The Earthquakers. And I'm there by myself, and I pick up the book, and I started thumbing through it. I came to page 65 in the book, and it chronicles my dad's crash. That's the first time I'd seen it in print like that. It kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. You know, it formalized this. Then there was a stack of mission reports in some folders. As I'm thumbing through the folders, I actually found the actual mission report, March 29th, 1943, describing the mission that my dad was on, describing his crew, and describing the fact that he went down and perished. But it also identified the crew members. Well, all of this time, I felt that those guys had perished. And so later, I followed up and was advised to go into an Army Air Force website. I went in and I input the names of the crew members because I wanted to contact their families, because my dad had written about a couple of these guys and I wanted them to know about my book and that.
But again, your understanding is this entire crew perished, so anyone you get in contact with is on a similar quest to you, learning something about someone who never came home from the war.
Right, right. So within days of me submitting the names of the crew members, I had an email from a gentleman in Michigan, and he said, "Roger, there were two survivors of your dad's plane crash, and their names are Sergeant Lang and Anderson, and Sergeant Lang wrote a book about being a prisoner of war."
How'd you keep your eyes inside your head at that point?
I was somewhat numb. And when he related that, well, here's the name of the book, and, oh, by the way, his son lives in Astoria, Oregon, and here's his phone number. So I'm sitting on the couch with my wife at 8:30 at night, and I have my Kindle. I download the book, and the first page is my dad. It mentions my dad as being the pilot. And then it goes in and describes the day of the mission and the fact that my dad lined all the guys up in front of the plane, thoroughly inspected their chutes, their weaponry, etc. Sergeant Lang comments that he'd never done that before. There was something that they felt.
He knew it was a treacherous mission.
Premonition. In fact, in the book that Sergeant Lang writes, it was so strong that he got in a Jeep, drove across the field to say goodbye to one of his friends. Just something that they felt.
I don't want to get you off track here, but I'm sure people at home are wondering, well, what was this mission? Where were they? What were they doing? What made it so dangerous? What can you tell us about that?
The 12th Bomb Group was fighting Rommel in Egypt and in North Africa. And Rommel and his forces were beating up the British 8th Army pretty badly. And Rommel's quest was to take over Egypt in the area because of the oil production. They needed that to feed the war machine. Mm-hmm. And that's when Roosevelt and Churchill agreed to have American forces come in and help the British. So we had the American Army troops that were in supporting the 5th Army, and then our bombers, the B-25 group and some B-24s, etc., were fighting the Battle of El Alamein, trying to turn back Rommel. And if we weren't successful, the outcome of the war could have been quite a bit different.
No doubt.
So that's what my dad was involved in. In fact, on one of the campaigns, they flew 7 missions in one day. My dad was hit on one of those missions. And as I stated earlier, the plane was on fire, but the guys decided to continue the mission, drop their bombs. And then that's when Dad peeled off. The plane was hit on the co-pilot side. It's on fire. My dad gets control of the plane per eyewitness reports and feathers the engine on that side. And
this is a B-25 and he's the pilot.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So he feathers the engine and they're still going at this point.
They're still going, and the Sergeant Lang writes in his accounts that the plane now is engulfed in flames. He lost all communications with the front of the plane, my dad and co-pilot and bombardier. The tail gunner was able to get out of the escape hatch. Sergeant Lang is hung up with his chute on a desk. Flames are swirling through the plane where he's at. He states that the skin is burning off of his face and burning off of his arms. He's trying to free the parachute up. He finally is able to do that and is able to escape just prior to the plane exploding and going into the ocean. When I was in Seattle with Colonel Miller, I knew that Colonel Miller was the last one to see my dad alive. In fact, my dad even gave him a pin per Colonel Miller, said, "Hold this for me until I get back." As I'm walking with Colonel Miller to an event that they were having at the reunion, he looks at me and he said, "Roger, are you aware that I am the one that told your dad that you were born and that he died that day?"
And you've known him all these years and he hasn't told you this?
No. And I said, "No, sir, I didn't know that." Hit me pretty hard again. It was just incredible.
And one of the things that people will find out if they read your book, you have that cablegram that had been received that day, and so it was Miller who ran out and told your dad, you're a father.
Yeah. Yeah.
The day he ended up getting killed,
right.
The day his plane went down,
right.
He found out that you were born.
And I'm learning so many things so quickly. It was overwhelming. He also relates to me that my dad flew with him on the West Coast submarine patrol before they went over to North Africa because there was a threat of the Japanese Navy coming in to the West Coast. Well, I didn't know that. Later that evening, about 10 o'clock at night, I'm sitting in this hospitality room with another gentleman whose grandfather was a B-25 crewman. We're talking, and this gal came over to me. This is about 10 o'clock at night, and she says, I want to show you something. I said, "What?" She says, "Well, I've written about your father's crash." I said, "Pardon me?" She says, "I want to show you what I've written." She says, "I've been writing a book for 13 years, and I've been documenting stories." Well, I'm sitting there with a name tag on Roger Murray, son of Roger Jameson.
Mm-hmm.
And she had seen the book that I had laid there, my manuscript of the letters. So she sits down with me and she opens up the last two pages of her manuscript. And it's a complete accounting of a Captain Cameron following my dad's plane and watching the plane being hit. And then describing the fact that they saw three parachutes come out of the plane, two from the back. And the eyewitness account shows that there was one chute that came out of the front, hurled out of the front just before the plane exploded. And so I asked her, I said, "Why would you write about my dad with all these guys that we lost in that?" She said, "There was just something that compelled me to do that."
Mm-hmm.
And so, the story keeps coming.
So now with this account of that five-man crew, and you were shocked to know even two survived, and
right.
Now you're saying, wait a second, maybe three survived.
Right. So now it kind of flashes back to my mom thinking, I still feel that your dad's alive. That now comes back to the story of the young boy that was spotted in Italy. So now it opens these doors of, well, could the other parachute have been my dad?
And you told us earlier your grandson had discovered he's buried in Tunisia, but there's his name there.
His name's there, but he crashed in the ocean, so there were no bodies.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that's a supposition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a Twilight Zone type
thing. And in Tunisia, they memorialize your father, the co-pilot, and the bombardier. If there was a third chute to come out the front of the plane, it had to be one of those three.
Right. The likelihood of it being the bombardier is somewhat unlikely in the fact that he would be in the nose of the plane. Because of the access tunnel to get to the nose, they had to leave the parachute back in the midsection of the plane because they couldn't fit with the parachute on. And if the plane is on fire and in the front vicinity, it's doubtful that could have been him. Secondly, the plane was hit on the co-pilot side. So, I don't know.
So, just taking all of your emotions out of it, if someone came out the front of the plane, just by sheer probability and your knowledge of the circumstances, of the three candidates, the most likely would have been your father.
Correct. But, the possibility of that is very remote, but it's still just a little thing that's open in the back of my mind.
So what happened next?
About a year and a half ago, I was in my garage. I was going through some old memorabilia that I had, some old coin collections and things. And as I opened a can, I found there was a dollar bill that was all folded up that I've had probably since I was 8 or 9 years old. Never paid attention. It was just an old dollar bill.
And it's amazing you didn't spend it somewhere. I've got a 10-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
They know how to get rid of a dollar pretty easy.
Right. So when I unfold the dollar bill, I see that my dad's name is written at the top. R.W. Jameson, and it's dated 5/4/42. And the first signature under that is Colonel Miller. He was a lieutenant at the time. And there are some 16 names written on this thing, and it's called a short snorter. I'm sitting in my office and I'm trying to distinguish the names, and there was a name, Gaylord D. Holmes, that I could distinguish. So I went on the internet and I pulled up the name Gaylord D. Holmes, and it shows that there's one in Sublimity, Oregon. I found that the phone number for Gaylord D. Holmes. So I called it. An elderly lady answered the phone, and I said, "My name's Roger. My father was Roger Jameson, and I found a document that has Gaylord D. Holmes' name on it. And I wanted to know if you knew of anyone in Sublimity by that name." She says, "It's my husband. Do you want to talk to him?"
I bet that hair was standing up on your neck again.
I said, "Absolutely."
And I know none of us can wait to find out what he had to say, but we're going to have to just for a minute. Time for a break, but we'll find out how Roger Murray's picture of the father he never met became clearer and clearer when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.